Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the state of Texas and this honorable court.
Thank you. Please be seated. Good morning. The court has four matters on its oral submission docket. In the order of their appearance, they are docket number 040550, Fifth Club, Inc., and David A. West versus Roberto Ramirez from Travis County and the Third Court of Appeals District. 040751, consolidated with 040752, Texas Municipal Power Agency, City of Denton, City of Garland, and Guess, FKA Greenville Electric Utility System versus Public Utility Commission of Texas and City of Bryan, Texas from Travis County and the Third Court of Appeals District, and 050261, Mid-Continent Insurance Company versus Liberty Mutual Insurance Company, which is here on certified question from the United States Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit. The court has allotted 20 minutes per side in these matters, and the court will take a brief recess between each argument. We expect to conclude all arguments before noon today. These proceedings are being recorded, and a link to the arguments should be posted on the court's website by the end of the day today. The court is now ready to hear argument in 040550, Fifth Club, Inc., and David A. West versus Roberto Ramirez.
May it please the court, Mr. Timothy Cortez will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioners have reserved 5 minutes.
Thank you. May it please the court, I'm here representing Fifth Club and David West today in this case. I'd like to outline our argument to start with. I'd like to address the temporary damages issues because I believe that those are the easiest for the court to resolve, and then move to the direct liability and vicarious liability issues. And the relief that we request today is reduced judgment for David West and no judgment of money damages for Fifth Club.
Mr. West is a petitioner.
I'm sorry, Your
Honor. Mr. West is a petitioner.
Yes, Your Honor. The issue is on a damages issue for future mental anguish. I don't intend to address that in the argument today unless the court wants to ask me about it. I just want to leave that in the brief. There are three key facts that I think are undisputed. One is that there is no evidence of any history of violence by Mr. West. Two, Mr. West was a licensed, trained peace officer. And three, he was not an employee of Fifth Club. And I think those issues impact all of the other issues that we've asked the court to address. As to the gross negligence and exemplary damages points, I would like to make a preliminary point. The respondent has argued that we haven't challenged these liability findings against Mr. West, and so they've made a vicarious liability argument such that we would be responsible for punitive damages, liable for punitive damages as a result of Mr. West's conduct. But I want to point out to the court that the jury did not assign Mr. West any punitive damages. They put zero by his name for punitive damages. So we disagree that there's vicarious liability. But even if there were in that instance, Fifth Club would not owe punitive damages for Mr. West's conduct because the jury placed none on him. It's our view that the exemplary damages award that the trial court entered and the Court of Appeals affirmed conflicts with a number of this court's opinions. The IHS Cedars case, Coastal versus Crown Central, Kirby E versus Helton, Southwestern Bell versus Garland, Dillard versus Silva, in the interest of JFC. There may be others, but the lower court's opinion conflicts with all of those in a couple of respects. First, the Court of Appeals did not address the evidence according to a clear and convincing standard of review, which is what the statute requires and what opinions of this court have required most recently in Romero versus KPH. and Southwest Revell versus Garson. Further, in reviewing the evidence, the Court of Appeals should have looked at all of the evidence under this legal sufficiency review, as this Court recently held in the City of Keller case.
If somebody hired West now, could they be held? Would that be some evidence of gross negligence?
Since there is evidence of history, since there would be evidence of a history of a problem, and I guess that begs the question of how much do you have to do, and that's kind of at the root of this whole case, how much do you have to do to investigate someone? And I think clearly under the reasoning of this Court's opinions in the Lee Lewis case, and there's another one, when the hirer, the employer of an independent contractor, has some knowledge, there's a duty. They have knowledge of a problem. Now, what all does the employer of an independent contractor have to do to find out that information? But if they have knowledge, I think so.
But you don't think they have to go look?
I don't think that in this. Well, two answers to that. The first answer is, in this case, we reject the suggestion by the respondent that we had our head in the sand, that we had no knowledge of this individual. My argument is that it's reasonable for the club owner to, one, want a peace officer. And if anybody is trained in such a way to be able to handle a situation like this, it would be a peace officer. So then they had a history. The evidence of trial was that they had a history of using this officer Hernandez to find people and coordinate off-duty police officers to work security. So they had that information, and they had information that this was somebody who was a licensed peace officer. So to the extent a duty of inquiry, as the Court described it in Moore versus Roberts, I think that inquiry was accomplished, and there was not a need to
so
do
the school,
anything more.
The primary school is hiring grade school teachers. They could entrust that function to somebody else. Tell Joe Smith, you hire our teachers for us and do no investigation of their teachers. Put them in charge of a classroom of young children. Because after all, we didn't pick them. We entrusted that to somebody else. If they pick a molester, then it's his fault, not ours.
Maybe the question is, who is Joe Smith? If we I don't know, drive by and pick up a hitchhiker and ask him to do it, you know, that may present a problem.
Were you paying? Was the club paying this officer to find other officers?
I'm not aware of any facts to that effect.
Would the analysis be any different if West had not been a certified peace officer?
Perhaps, because I think that is a key point. Having been a certified peace officer, the club was reasonable in believing that he had training to handle a situation like
that. But that certified peace officers themselves may have history of violence, could have been suspended, and there may be incidents in certified peace officers' background that would say to a prudent employer that this is not someone that should be providing security. Is that not true?
That is true, and certainly we see on the news all too often that peace officers, in the course and scope of their duties as policemen, commit assaults and do things that they shouldn't do.
So does it satisfy the duty then, simply to know that the officer that you're going to use to provide security is a peace officer, or should there be additional investigation done?
I think it does satisfy the duty. I mean, how high is the standard going to be? What are we going to require? How much investigation are we going to require, and how broad are we going to broadly are we going to impose this duty? If you have somebody doing work on your house, and the person's going to come in and do tile or paint, and they're an independent contractor, and they're just coming to do, you know, they say Imperial Painting on the side of their truck. Do you, as the homeowner, have the duty to Google them, to call all their references, ask them for references, and call them? I don't think it's a matter of good public policy for the court to impose those kinds of duties, and I think that this, that Justice Hecht has written in a dissenting or concurring opinion that the court really doesn't have a desire to impede the reasonable use by businesses and individuals of independent contractors. The outcome of this case, this personal character exception, really seems to me to impose more liability, a broader liability, on the employer of an independent contractor than the employer of an employee. One of the issues that lower courts have addressed in assault cases, like the Kendall versus Whataburger, where the guy hit a customer in the face with a fry basket, you know, was whether he was in course of scope of employment.
Well, but the Frito-Lay said a guy, manager taking over the delivery one day, getting in a fight with the store manager, was in the course of scope. So.
Yes, that's correct.
And bouncer at a club, more likely the fight's going to be course of scope than somebody delivering Fritos.
Well, that's an interesting point, because I mean, you should characterize him as a bouncer. I wonder how this case would be viewed or could be viewed if Fifth Club had simply called the police. If we didn't have the individual there, and we had a guy, and the evidence was that the doorman didn't want to let him in, and there's just a police car out there on the street, and we waved at the policeman and asked him to come. Does that make us liable in that situation? Certainly, escorting people out was part of what he was there to do, but this negligence, I'm sorry, this liability automatically, so this case of strict liability, the way that personal character exception was the basis for the Court of Appeals decision. It really is a matter of strict liability for the hirer of an independent contractor.
Just to clarify, you're not arguing official immunity anymore before this court, right? You've abandoned that defense.
I'm sorry?
You're no longer arguing official immunity before this court. You're abandoning that defense.
With respect to, well, it's not abandoned. I think that my decision was that's just too close of a fact issue, and that had been resolved and was not appropriate to bring to this court. So as to West, that's not abandonment, but I don't think we've brought that to this court.
Well, there seem to be two or three cases out there anyway with respect to the personal character exception, that in this situation where you're protecting customers on your property, that there should be some heightened standard, close to a non-delegable duty kind of thing. Isn't there some basis for a public policy reason?
This court has never recognized this personal character exception, and it seems to have its origin in an older New York case. I guess the way I would address that question is to say, does this court's existing jurisprudence meet whatever need would exist with respect to that? We don't have an argument in this case that this is an inherently dangerous activity that warrants a non-delegable duty for strict liability. We have a situation in which the court, I think, can address the issue simply by applying its existing control jurisprudence. And about that, I think there's a point to be made. I think there's some confusion perhaps, heaven forbid, even on my part, is between control that creates vicarious liability and control that that can give rise to direct liability. And the Court of Appeals had said, citing the Wolf case, had said that vicarious liability can arise when there's such and such control and so forth. And in my brief, I kind of endorsed that statement, but looking at it in preparation for this argument, it's not correct. That case was an employee case. It was more of a respondent superior case. It was not like Dow Chemical versus Bright and Exxon versus Tidwell and a number of these other cases where control, there's control, and then there's got to be some additional wrongdoing by the hirer of the independent contractor. And I'm arguing that we don't have any of that wrongdoing. And I'm arguing that the Court of Appeals erred in citing as evidence of wrongdoing facts that are nothing more than evidence of an independent contractor relationship. The court, in a block of text that is set out in the brief on merits, listed some facts. We didn't take applications. We didn't know who the guy was. We had training manuals for our inside guys, but we didn't supply those to the outside guys. Therefore, we were negligent.
Mr. Proti, excuse my voice. Saw a disappointing loss last night in Minute Maid Park.
Yeah, and, I saw that loss too.
I had to live it. But having said that, is there an increased duty on your client by the fact that your client is encouraging these patrons to come here to your establishment, and your client benefits financially from their visitations to your club? Is there an increased duty in that instance to perhaps do a little bit more than determine whether or not a peace officer is indeed a peace officer, not some hooligan?
My light's on. May I respond?
Yes.
Every independent contractor that's hired presumably affords some duty to the person hiring. So if that were the basis for imposing liability on the hirer, then we do have strict liability because everyone hires an independent contractor to provide some benefit to them.
Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear arguments from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Scott Julia will present argument for the respondent.
May it please the court, my name is Scott Cooley. I'm a selectman for the board here in Austin. My partner, Carlos Soteros. Council table with me, we represent Roberto Ramirez. And really, I think the case about one thing, and that is, do clubs such as Club Rodeo, it touches a little bit on Justice Medina's point, who have patrons come to their establishments, do they owe any duty whatsoever to protect those persons from harm?
What in this record, though, is any indication of this type of harm? I mean, in terms of foreseeability, had they done a thorough background check, what would they have found about this officer? He violated some supposedly minor restrictions of his employment at Houston Tillotson. I mean, that wouldn't indicate this type of violence was foreseeable.
Sure.
So even presuming the duty that you're espousing here, presuming that duty's there to make inquiry, what would such an inquiry have revealed here?
One thing it would have revealed is that it was against the policy of Houston Tillotson to allow him to work there. It would
but
have.
But how does that foreshadow this type of violence?
It might not foreshadow this type of violence, but what we have is an individual who's carrying a gun coming to the U2 Club Rodeo, and we know, had any inquiry been made, that he's willing to violate the policies of his work. It would have revealed, as you mentioned, some minor probationary things that happened while he was at Houston Tillotson. He'd only been there a month. And it would have at least put Club Rodeo on alert that you can't trust someone who would violate the policies of their work, would have some sort of past probation.
Same thing with anybody that had a parking ticket, too, right? They're willing to break the law parking. They're willing to break the law hitting people.
Except that we're talking about willing.
I mean, this is a club at, what, 1 a.m., 2 a.m.? What time was the fight?
Yes, sir.
I mean, you don't want a first grade teacher out there, do you?
You don't.
I mean, you want somebody with, you know, when they. You want a police officer.
That's right, you do.
And, you know, there's a lot of reasons that police departments have these rules, but all police officers do this. Lots of police departments don't like it because they end up getting sued when their guys go out there. But, I mean, what possibly, if the rule is, if you've ever broken a rule, then we can't have any bouncers in clubs, right?
I don't think the rule should be that. I think the rule should follow the law as it's been for decades, that the employer, when hiring an independent contractor, has a duty of care. Did they satisfy the duty of care here? No, you may.
Well, surely you don't want a police officer that comes on the videotapes like you did on Rodney King or within this most recent tape that we saw in New Orleans, right?
You don't want that.
And how would you find that out but not for a background check?
I don't know that you would, but all we're asking for is to satisfy the standard of care. That's what the jury in this case was asked. Were they negligent? The answer is yes, because...
How is this case different from our, I think it was Club Royale, the apartment case, where a child who resided in the apartment building went home to retrieve something from his home and was sexually molested along the way, and the argument was made that a proper background check was not made on the tenant. And the record revealed that he had some minor infractions in the law, and the court said that there was nothing in his background, even if a thorough check had been made, that would indicate that this type of activity could occur. How is this analysis any different than that?
It's different because we're not talking about a tenant. We're talking about someone that Mr. Salem trusted, as Justice Brister pointed out, to carry a gun, to come to the establishment, to protect the establishment, protect its patrons. And what Mr. Salem did was tell a third party, we want you to hire someone for us. And that's it.
I still don't understand the distinction between that case.
The distinction
is... Because the duty you're seeking to impose is not enough of a background check that would have revealed something. And I think that the holding of that case was, if there's nothing that would have been revealed, there just can be no proximate cause.
What we want to impose, Judge, is not a duty to do background checks. We want to show this court that there is a standard of care, of ordinary care, that Fifth Club needed to meet. And it could be on a continuum. It could be making a phone call yourself. Is David West an employee of your police department? And taking it from there. Judge Keith?
Have you given us your best evidence for proximate cause?
I'm afraid that I have. All I have is Chief Keith saying, if you had called, I would have said, no, he cannot work there. It's against our policies for him to, A, not have filled out an application with us for outside employment, and B, to work at a place that serves alcohol. Now, Chief Keith, I keep wanting to call him Justice, I don't know why that is, Chief Keith also said, when he testified in an offer of proof, that yes, there were problems with David West's background. It was enough to show that Chief Keith knew that there was a possibility of problem, sure, and that he would have disallowed the employment.
But it was okay with the chief for him to work on a college campus, but not in a bar.
It was. There is a distinction when we're talking about late at night. In many instances, we're talking about alcohol, whether tensions are high. For whatever reason, yes, Judge, Houston Tillotson said it was okay for you to work for us. At least that's what's in the record. But that's not the situation. We didn't sue Houston Tillotson. We sued
there was no specific jury finding on the application of his personal character exception, was there? And the jury didn't find
The jury did not have a personal character question, no, sir. What it had was a finding of control. And so the vicarious liability on Fifth Club's part, the avenue to that was the furtherance of a mission for Fifth Club. And that raises an important distinction because there are two ways to get there in this case. The first one is strictly the negligence of Fifth Club. Now, I don't like the way our discussion went. I'm not gonna be naive and say that you guys are heading straight down the negligence path and that you're gonna get there. But the fact is, you know our position. We feel like the standard of care was violated. They didn't do anything. End of story. Had they done something, Chief Keith said he would have disallowed the employment. There was some history. It's foreseeable that a problem could have arisen. That's our position.
Just on that before you leave it, was there anything in the record about whether police departments respond to these sorts of inquiries generally as opposed to this campus police department? And can you call up the police department and say, I was thinking of hiring Officer Jones to direct traffic this weekend. Can you tell me anything about him? I would be surprised they would respond to that, but I just wonder if there's anything in the record.
Well, what there is there's testimony from Merlin Moore, who is an expert that we employed, who said, yes, this is a standard type thing. You have to make the phone call. And you find out what you're going to find out. Now, did he say that specifically Chief Keith, yes, would have said, sorry, there's a problem, can't employ this guy? No. But was it common in this arena to do that? Yes. Officer Payne also testified to the same thing. That's standard procedure, is to call, just at least make a phone call, find out if the guy is who he says he is. Is he, in fact, a licensed peace officer? Is he in good standing with his employer, in this case, Houston Tillotson?
Okay, move on to one other question.
Yes, sir.
If the phone call had revealed that the officer missed a lot of work, say he had an eating disorder, he missed a lot of work, he violates the policies of his employer by missing a lot of work, would that have satisfied or provided sufficient nexus to give the club some indication that he was a problem? He said all they had to do was make the phone call. Is that all?
Well, again, I don't think it's a bright line rule. They need to satisfy the standard of care, whether it's an application with references that then leads them to take the next step and call the employer, call a former employer, whether it is doing a reference check or a criminal background check, rather, which we're not asking for. But again, there's a continuum, and it's up to the jury to decide, did what they did satisfy the duty of ordinary care? And the answer is no. Would they have discovered, would it have put the club on alert if he had had an eating disorder? Probably not. But would it have put him on alert if he constantly missed work and they needed someone who was reliable because at 1 a.m. It takes 15 minutes for the cops to come? Yeah, that would have been some indication that what might happen was this guy was not fit to be a security guard. Would it have indicated that he would break someone's skull? Maybe not. But would it have gotten, would it have raised the red flag? My answer to that is yes.
You were going to move on to control, I think.
Well, and the reason I was going to do that is because there are two ways. One is just the negligence of Fifth Club, which doesn't involve the personal character analysis or the control analysis. And the second is vicarious liability. And I want to clarify, we are not saying that David West had punitive damages against him because he clearly did not. However, there was a malice finding. There was negligence, assault, gross negligence, malice against David West. The damage amount of punitives was zero against Mr. West. But Fifth Club was jointly and severally liable for the entire amount of actual damages against Mr. West, which was about $38,000. And then it was liable for another $50,000 or so on its own. What the vicarious liability analysis does is it at least gets us to David West's actions, which were assault, negligence, gross negligence, and malice. And then question number 22, the damages question, said, what would compensate Mr. Ramirez for these damages, and that's where we get our $100,000. It was not broken down between the various acts by the various perpetrators in this case.
Can I stop you right there? You don't mind. You said that there are two liability ways of getting liability here. That's the negligence of Fifth Club and then the vicarious liability. So negligence does not include the personal character exception. Are you saying here that you're not relying upon a personal character exception in this?
I'm not saying that, no. We think that that does get Fifth Club on the hook for what the cases throughout the years have said is if you're employing someone, an independent contractor, to protect your property, protect those that come to your property, you can be liable for the intentional torts of the act.
Okay, so then that's the third liability. You said there were two. Is that you're adding a third then?
No, sir. I meant that as an avenue towards vicarious liability.
Okay.
And so we're...
And there's no difference between the personal character and the right of control.
Well, I think there is, because the right of control could apply to situations where it wasn't necessarily of a personal nature.
Right, but the result of personal character is, as a matter of law, you control everything a bouncer does.
I'm not sure I agree with that. I mean, maybe from a 30,000 foot perspective, that's what it is. But there are policies behind the personal character exception that Justice Medina touched on, such as having persons come into your establishment for which you're trying to get financial gain. That was a policy that the Dupree Court found in favor of the personal character exception.
But as I understand the personal character exception, you're liable for anything they do in the course and scope of their employment, even though they're in contract.
I agree with that.
So, in effect, you're saying you control everything that independent contractor does. Why do we need a special rule for that? What's wrong with the Tidwell, Shell Oil versus Kahn general rule? If you controlled it, then you're liable for it. But in the following cases, we don't care whether you control it or not. We're going to deem you to have to control it.
Right. It's a bootstrap. I think that while personal character, I see where you're going. While personal character would encompass control, control wouldn't necessarily encompass personal character, because you don't always have personal character of the employment at issue. But I think they both get to the same place, and that is vicarious liability. And the question in Redinger, the question in the cases on control is, did they control some?
Yeah, but the difference is Redinger's our case. Personal character is not. That's the Corpus Christi court's case. Austin's court case. And the question is, we've said over and over and over, independent contractors, you're only liable for what they do if you control them. And now you're asking us to set all that aside and adopt an expanded rule that says, as a matter of law, in the following occupations, you control them. I don't think there's anything except bouncer in that list, is there?
No, Your Honor. I don't agree.
Why do we need a bouncer rule for independent contractors? Is this the most dangerous job in the state, a bouncer?
Ask for Barry.
There are people you can hire that can do more damage than a bouncer, right?
True, like an off-duty peace officer who's packing heat. And
how about independent contractor run your nuclear power plant? Is that rather dangerous? How about, I mean, there's a long list. So this personal character, if we start down the road of, well, but this is a dangerous job, there may be a long list there.
Well, doesn't it matter what risk the public that has when you're determining whether or not this applies or not?
It does. It matters what risk to the public. It matters how much contact these people will have with the public. Will the nuclear power plant operator have that kind of contact? Probably not. Will he be packing heat? Probably not. Will he be dealing with volatile situations? Probably not. Volatile involving humans, alcohol, late at night, that sort of thing. But I want to touch on something. I don't think that this would be the first time that this court would recognize a personal character exception. Now, they didn't call it that in Texas and Pacific Railway versus Hagenlowe, which, let me give you the site, 247. It's in our brief, 247 Southwest 2nd 236. And what that was a case where two employees, one an independent contractor, one an employee of a railway company,
essentially got into a fight after the independent contractor had accused him of stealing some things. This court said the nature of the employment may be such as necessarily to involve at times the use of force, as where the employee's duty is to guard the employer's property and protect it from trespassers, so that the act of using force may be in furtherance of the employer's business, making it liable even when greater force is used than necessary. That's 1952 from this court. It did not call it a personal character exception, but that's clearly what was at issue in that case. Now, the court didn't find that it applied because they found personal animosity between the independent contractor and the employee. That was not the situation here. There's no evidence of any history between these two. The Court of Appeals pointed it out in its analysis of the personal character exception. And so it wouldn't be the first time that this court went down that road. It's recognized that rule of law for 54 years.
Talk about control. What specific evidence is in this record that demonstrates that the club directed how security did its job?
Well, the first thing they did was they told them where to stand. They told them where to be. They told them what they needed to be done. And I agree that telling them the general description is not enough. But they said, when it is time for you to come in and at our direction, remove someone. We are deciding why they need to be removed. We're deciding the level of urgency. We use our flashlights to get you here. You come in, then we tell you exactly who it is. We tell you remove that person. Remove him because he was doing X, Y, or Z.
But you don't tell them how to do it. So, I mean, how is that different from a general contractor saying, plaster that wall and we need it done in 2 days?
Or it's not different from a hospital telling the doctor, come in here in an emergency room, do a code.
I think it's different because it's not as simple as giving the direction. It's telling them who it is, why they need to do it, and to do it now, do it later, to what extent they need to do it. Do they need to just escort them to the door? Do they need to take them outside and call the police? It goes level upon level upon level. It's not the same as the Ross case, where there was a contract that said, here's all we want you to do, security guards. Now, go do it. And then we turn our head. It's different. It takes it a step farther. And
what
it's
did they do here besides, say, remove this guy?
They decided that he needed to be removed, for one thing. They called in the officers. They told the officers to remove him. They had specific... May I finish answering?
Yes.
They had specific policies for how this was to be done by inside security that they did not show to outside security. And that just goes to the, first of all, the test for objectivity from an objective viewpoint. Is there an extreme risk of harm? The answer is yes. They had policies for inside people to know exactly what to do. Subjectively, the fact that they had that shows that Salim Salem, the man who testified in this case on behalf of Fifth Club, knew exactly what was going to need to be done by inside security and outside security, but he chose not to have any involvement whatsoever after the phone call to Paul Hernandez to say, hire these people. And on the site, they controlled what and when it happened. End of story.
Thank you, Paul.
Just a few points. First of all, I heard in that argument, again, this is a little confusion between vicarious liability that results from control, and there's confusion about what the effect of control is. I think this court's jurisprudence is that in an independent contractor situation, if there's control, more is required. There has to be some negligence for liability to follow, and that when there's an independent contractor, vicarious liability doesn't automatically follow as a result of some exercise of control by of part of the work. Here, there's not any negligent flashlighting issue, I don't think. Asking...
Well, but what Friday or Saturday night was this? I mean, my experience in criminal law, everything happens between midnight and 2 a.m. on Friday and Saturday night. That's when almost all crimes are committed. Your guy runs a club where people get drunk and they're there at this time of night. Frankly, you know there's going to be some criminal activity, at least some fights out in the parking lot. So, of course, you don't hire an employee to watch it because that way you get sued. You hire an independent contractor. Isn't this just a way to make sure that whoever cracks the heads is judgment-proof?
I don't think so. That seems to be what animates this personal character exception to start with. And looking at that New York case,
you'd agree we don't want the law to encourage people to hire head crackers so that the people with the cracked heads won't be able to recover anything.
I agree with that. But I think what they did in this case was not hire a head cracker. They hired a trained police officer. And I think that's a good thing, not a bad thing.
And, of course, the reason they did that, rather than the Sunday school teachers, they know there's going to be fights and
That's a possibility.
Potential crime.
And that may be legitimate, but I would say that the reason they do that is not because he's a tough guy who can handle himself in a fight, but because, ostensibly at least, he's been trained to handle the situation with resistant people. And that's the good thing that I would see. And again, we know policemen do bad things sometimes. Here, there's not any evidence in the record that Mr. West had done anything bad that would in any way indicate that this event was going to occur. There was just no notice.
From an economic perspective, why is it on your property we shouldn't have a rule that says you can't get rid of this kind of liability?
Well, that sounds like the bouncer rule.
How about at Walmart? I mean, you know, big stores attract assaults and muggers and stuff like that. Should we allow Walmart to attract hundreds of people late at night, 24 hours, and then to disclaim when anything happens, when a robbery happens in the parking lot, to say, oh, well, of course, that wasn't our employee? Is there what would be wrong with a rule that says, look, it's your property, it's your business, you're liable, independent contractor or not?
That's certainly a policy decision that the court can make. I just wonder where we stop drawing the line on imposing the liability on hirers of independent contractors. If it's going to be Walmart because they have some benefit, because it's a big business, they have some benefit to having someone there to protect their property. Parenthetically, I'm not sure that was actually going on here. I mean, the club's got an obligation not to let drunks in. So there's a shade of difference there that I perceive. But if it's a matter of having someone there and not being able to disclaim their liability when they do something bad, that's a policy decision for the court to make, and that rationale has been spelled out in earlier court cases. That's why we do this. We spread the liability. People can buy liability insurance and so forth. But where are we going to draw the line? And the contractor who comes to your house also provides a benefit to you. Other than the size of the benefit or the character of the benefit, what's the difference?
We disagree that providing security at a club like this is an inherently dangerous activity.
I do disagree. Looks like I'm out of time. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That concludes the argument, and the court will now take a brief recess.
All right.